130 miles to the north of D.C., the Delaware Valley's definitely feeling the ripple effects of the partial federal government shutdown. Also 11 days on, healthcare exchanges continue to test the patience of potential patients who try to access them. Two of the topics we've touched on this week, and let's take it to the next level on Reporters Roundtable. Joining me first is WHYY health and science reporter Tanya English. Tanya, thanks for joining us once again.
Hey, Dave. Good to be here.
So healthcare.gov has been in ICU since its launch October 1st. How's recovery coming along for the residents in our tri-state area trying to purchase health coverage through the website?
You know, it depends on who you ask. Secretary Kathleen Sebelius was in Pennsylvania this week, and she says people are having success logging on.
But are far more people not having success?
Far more people that report to me and my colleagues around the country are not having success. This federal website is just having a lot of frustration. I think that consumer advocates out there are trying to redirect some of that frustration, but I personally and my colleagues just have not heard of anyone who's been able to log on through healthcare.gov.
Now, in truth, there's nothing critical about logging on October 1st or even today. Go over the timeline with us.
You know, I heard someone talking earlier, and they were saying it's kind of like Black Friday, where we all rush to shop for a big sale. But the truth about this sale is it doesn't expire. So people do have a little bit of time. So what the timeline is, people need to be logged in and signed up for coverage by December 15th to have coverage by January 1st. But penalties don't kick in until March of next year. And the open enrollment is through March.
Let's come into Center City, Philadelphia, corporate headquarters for Aramark, which disclosed this week that it would have its employees go through a private health exchange. What are they again, and why do companies prefer them?
We're talking about marketplaces and exchanges, and it's easy to get them confused. So this is something different. This is not for the people that would usually buy through healthcare.gov. It's an option that a lot of larger employees, especially those with a lot of part-time workers, are choosing. They're just getting kind of tired of waiting through all the benefit options for their in-house people, and they're kind of subcontracting that out. So what happens is they give a defined contribution to all of their workers. They send them to this marketplace, and then they go and shop there. They have more choices there. And it's less of an administrative headache for the companies.
Tanya, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, now let's get complete answers on the partial shutdown with WHYY's Holly Otterbein. Hi, Holly.
Hi.
Well, we need look no further than right across the street at Independence Mall to see evidence of its impact, though. Is it possible that some peripheral businesses are actually benefiting?
When the Independence National Historical Park first shut down as part of the federal government's partial shutdown, I did talk to some businesses, and they said it might end up helping their business because people who, you know, came to see the Liberty Bell would have to go somewhere else. But I actually visited the Bourse today, which is across the street from the Liberty Bell. It's a retail space. And all of the business owners that I spoke to said that their business has gone down recently, slightly. Nothing major yet, but that they are really worried about a longer-term federal government partial shutdown. I talked to one man. His name was Bruce Hazzoni. He's the owner of Vision Graphics, which is a print business in the Bourse. And he said that fewer businesses are actually ordering prints from him because of the slower business. So, for instance, he does a lot of prints for the Independence Visitor Center, and because of the shutdown, they're not ordering. So he said that in addition to that, his business being impacted, he's also kind of embarrassed by the reaction that tourists are having to the shutdown, particularly tourists from other countries.
Well, I want them to know that foreign tourists come here and they stand here and tell me that they can't believe our government is shut down, that this would never happen in the Netherlands, that they don't expect the U.S. have such a problem. It makes no sense to them.
So it's an embarrassment.
Very, very much so.
Let's expand our conversation to residents of the Delaware Valley, those who aren't specifically furloughed but are feeling the impact nonetheless.
Yeah, so there's a program called the Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children. It's a federal program administered by states, and it provides vouchers for women and babies to purchase fresh foods, fresh fruits and veggies, and baby formula. And the state of Pennsylvania says that it should be up and running until the end of the month. At that point, we're not exactly sure what is going to happen. It could be at risk. So I spoke with one woman, Ileana De Jesus. She is a part-time worker at the advocacy group Maternity Care Coalition. She receives WIC benefits for her two newborn sons. They were born prematurely, and so she has to get a special type of formula that's very expensive, and she's really concerned about the shutdown's impact. She's very worried that when she goes to get the next batch of vouchers for her babies, that they're not going to be available because of the shutdown.
How can I just be like, okay, to my newborns, we have to wait till Congress decides to, you know, whether or not continue the WIC program? You can't eat because we have to wait for Congress.
Just to give you a sense of how many people are impacted by that, more than 250,000 women and children in Pennsylvania receive WIC benefits. In Delaware, it's about 22,000, and in New Jersey, it's about 168,000. So we are talking about a lot of people here.
Thanks, Holly.
Thank you so much.
WHYY's Holly Otterbein on Newsworks Tonight.